Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I'm joined by one of our lovely contributors, Ashanti Omka.
Hello.
And our deputy editor, Matt Maitham.
Hello.
This week we're reviewing the awards-nominated Promising Young Woman, period biopic Effie Gray, new TV cop drama Mayor of Easttown, and rugby documentary Steelers. But before we start on those, what have you guys been watching this week? Ashanti, you've got your Captain America Shield t-shirt on. So may we infer from that you've been watching something Marvel?
Oh my gosh. Yes, again and again. Episode 4 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier just had me floored and I kept rewinding it. I know it sounds like I must be slightly crazy, but I kept watching it again and again. I just couldn't help myself. The minute the Dora Milaje came in, that was it. That was my favorite episode now of the whole series, and I don't know how they're going to top it.
Are you liking it more than WandaVision?
I thought I would, but I was so captivated by Wanda. I mean, I didn't think I would be. I didn't really think very much about her during the entire Avengers series, but she kind of saved the day there. And then once WandaVision started, and gosh, with Paul Bettany being this man with all this charisma and them coming together and that whole setup just completely drew me in. So right now, they're both about equal for me.
And where's Loki going to sit then? Do you think Loki's going to better them?
I think he is. In terms of entertainment, no one beats Loki. He's the trickster. And in Hindu mythology, which I kind of grew up with, we had a lot of gods like that who were very naughty. And that was a part of their persona. And you're sort of looking at them saying, "Ooh, this guy, he's really bad." And then they'll suddenly do something that's really good. And you're on the fence. Are they good? Are they bad? And we have that in a lot of Indian cinema, actually, these characters who are ambiguous. So Loki, I think, is going to blow our socks off.
Yeah. What have you been watching, Matt? Have you been also Falconing and Winter Soldiering?
Yeah, I've just literally just caught up with Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I'm really growing to like it because it's so much like some of the previous Marvel movies. I was kind of not as into it as I was with WandaVision on the first couple of episodes, but I really feel like it's really grown over the last couple, especially as Daniel Brühl's Baron Zemo has kind of come to the fore a bit more, and he's kind of the MVP for me in the series, and he's just having so much fun with it and able to do so much more than he did in Civil War.
Yeah, a bit shortchanged in the film, wasn't he?
Yeah, just so much more fun in this. And I'm kind of almost surprised we've only got 2 episodes left because these are longer than the WandaVision episodes. We've sort of 4 out of 6 done already, so there's like 2 left. And it was a very kind of explosive ending to this one, so kind of desperate to see what happens next.
We will see, we will see. Okay, so shall we move on to what we can watch this week? Let's get our revenge notebooks out. It's time for a reckoning with this.
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand. And every week, a nice guy comes over to see if I'm okay.
You okay?
You are so pretty. I am a nice guy.
Are you?
1, 2, 3, 4. I thought we had a connection.
Okay. How old am I? What are my hobbies? What's my name? Sorry, maybe that one's too hard.
Okay, so this is Promising Young Woman. It's been awards nominated. It's caused a fuss. It had a bit of a hoo-ha over a review. Matt, what's it about?
Okay, so yeah, this film has been around for a long time. It first debuted at the Sundance Film Festival in January 2020, when the world was still normal. And then it's almost like this film
in the before times.
Yeah, exactly. And this film for me is a real symbol of the before times because it's a film I just went to see at a normal screening, normal cinema. It was a film that was going to come out as normal, you know. And so that was just at the time where everything started to go downhill due to COVID. Basically, the film, you've probably heard a lot about it by now, but if you haven't, it's a sort of twist on the rape revenge genre from a very, very much from the female perspective. And we're following Kerry Mulligan, who plays Cassie. Basically, the setup is that she goes to clubs, acts completely out of it drunk, and then gets picked up by guys and kind of gives them a surprise, basically, when they've got her home. And then she suddenly sort of snaps and shows them that she's actually completely stone cold sober. Obviously, it's kind of hard to say like necessarily too much, but
yeah,
she's motivated by a kind of, you know, need for sort of revenge or sort of dealing with a trauma from her own past. And while this is happening, she meets like a sort of nice guy. She ends up sort of very slowly starting to have a relationship with, played by Bo Burnham, who directed Eighth Grade. He obviously starts to bring her out of her shell a bit. And, you know, she's very much withdrawn. And, you know, she's just so focused on her mission as she sees it. But then, yeah, there's lots more twists and turns from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the premise, but it's about so much, isn't it, Ashanti? I mean, you know, as women, this is very interesting to watch, right?
Totally. I had been awaiting this film. I'd heard a lot about it before I actually got to see it, because though it came out, as Matt mentioned, at Sundance, it was only during awards season that I got to see it. And I was just completely transfixed by what they were trying to show on screen, because we have seen these tropes dealt with before, but the treatment here, and this is why it's winning. I mean, it's won two BAFTAs and everybody's talking about it. The
it's
treatment,
nominated for
I think,
Oscars as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just absolutely love this, because Emerald Fennell, not only is she a fantastic actress, after I saw her in The Crown as Camilla Parker Bowles, I was completely kind of smitten by her. And she also worked on Killing Eve, so she had the right kind of credentials to make a film like this. And it's such a bold film. It showcases so many different aspects of the female experience, you know, and also choosing people like Bo Burnham. They're always good guys, aren't they? And they've gone for guys who you wouldn't see doing this kind of role. You know, these guys' normal characters, they would all be these really nice guys. But here, they put on this kind of persona of being very nice, but then you get to see these layers. And wow, Kerry is just absolutely fabulous in this role. I think that she was made for it. And she kind of came in and we were rooting for her. And what I read about this was that they had wanted a different ending. So the funders for this film wanted this ending to be changed. On one hand, I felt quite gratified by the ending. I felt there was some semblance of closure, but we were rooting for this woman to win right to the end. And without giving away too many spoilers, let's just say that she had some stumbling blocks, because she had seen something and experienced something through a friend of hers that distressed her so deeply. And she was out to get revenge. And she was doing it in a way that we all felt like, yes, they deserved what they were getting. The ending for me, just my heart just completely sank. So I'll say, get ready for something that will kind of blow your mind. You haven't seen it treated in this way. I've seen so many rape revenge films, including in Indian cinema. This time around, I think it will just open your eyes to how a person, you know, take the principal character who, you know, she's the principal of this school. She probably knows these things happen. And a lot of the time, a lot of women will go through some kind of sexual harassment, for example. But a lot of the time, there are people in power who will cover it up. And this film kind of explores those in a really brilliant way. I think the idea that there are predators out there, but there are people who will just try and mask it and try and allow those people who are intrinsically bad people to actually come out as good people. And someone like this character that Kerry plays so well, she's out there to just say, look, I want to show you up. I want you to think about what you've been doing. I want you to think about the idea as to, are you doing the right thing? I'm going to make you feel really uncomfortable about it. And that, I felt, Emerald Fennell just got through in her direction so well.
Absolutely. It's totally a bleak and uncomfortable film, but also wickedly funny and dark yes. and delicious in a way that is all at odds. And yet, tonally, Fennell and Mulligan nail that. It could have been something that played really badly, but I think the delicacy of the tone is amazing on this film. How did you feel watching it, Matt? I mean, obviously it's very much an attack on predatory men and showing them up for what they are actually like. And it's obviously the title of it is based on this case in America where a young man was given a less harsh sentence for rape based on the fact that he was a promising young swimmer, I believe, an athlete who had a promising life ahead and really shouldn't have his life ruined by a rape charge. So how did you feel watching it? It's quite no holds barred against the boys.
Yeah, it's obviously uncomfortable viewing. And It's also interesting that it kind of should have come out around the same time as I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole's TV series, because obviously there's a lot of kind of, you know, similarities you can draw between them. So it's all about like consent and culpability and all the different kind of facets of that, like Ashanti kind of pointed out. And we see all kind of different characters. Like we meet Alfred Molina has a small role as a kind of lawyer who is involved. And, you know, we meet people at the school and all that kind of thing. So you see so many different sides of it. And also, as Ashanti kind of pointed to, it's really interesting casting, because these guys that she does meet throughout the film, most of them are people we kind of recognize from sitcoms and things like that, like people you would traditionally warm to. Emerald Fennell has said before that part of the idea of this film was that this would have been the subject for like comedies not long ago, like when she was growing up, like this kind of, you know, getting people drunk and sort of taking advantage, you know, that was just what the hero of a teen comedy was doing. So I think especially, yeah, having that casting really sort of, you know, emphasizes that point. And yeah, and just the fact the film's got such an interesting look as well. So it sort of
looks amazing.
It looks amazing. It's all these kind of pastel colors, great soundtrack. So as you were kind of saying, it's that weird thing that obviously talking about it, it sounds so grim and tough, but it's weirdly sort of easy to watch, partly because it's just so sort of gripping. It's very entertaining with its sort of powerful message. It doesn't feel like a message movie when you're watching it in that sense, but it definitely leaves you with loads to talk about afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, the look is really interesting. The way that Carey Mulligan has been dressed and hair and makeup and everything is sort of evokes Britney in Hit Me Baby One More Time. And then, you know, there's certain songs that play like Paris Hilton's Stars Are Blind and things. And
I think a great moment.
All of this taps into this idea of how we treat women. And there's been a lot of discussion about how we've treated Britney and Paris and various other Lindsay Lohans of this world, how we treat women from a media and sort of culture consumption point of view, as well as how we treat women in a day-to-day. I mean, there's even a sort of scene where one of the characters comes into a coffee shop, meets her, and sort of decries what she does as a job. And every single part of this film is about how do we view women. And are we thinking about how we view women and how we treat them? I just think it's so multi-layered and so brilliant on all of those levels. I hope it wins Oscars. I don't think it will, sadly, but I really do wish it would, because I do think it's an important film as well as a really brilliant one.
Definitely going to watch this again when it does hit Sky, because it's basically been like a year since I've seen it. So I'm keen to actually sort of, you know, revisit it now that obviously there's been so much more talk about it. Obviously, it was kind of, you know, seeing it quite cold the first time, but I feel like I'm intrigued to dig into it again.
As Ashanti said, there's an ending and things are revealed throughout that actually, once you've finished watching it, you do want to watch it from the beginning, knowing what you know at the end, to see how that's played out. There's sadness there as well, the whole gamut of stuff. So I think we're highly recommending Promising Young Woman, aren't we?
Highly, yes. highly. It's about smashing the patriarchy, and that comes from awareness. You knew I would say that, didn't you, Jay?
Of course. Yes, absolutely. Say it.
And I think this film does it so, so, so well, just because like what Matt said as well, it's just given to you in such an entertaining package, but then it starts to make you think, and you might watch it 2-3 times, you know, if you didn't get it the first time, or you just thought, I just need to find out, what did she do there? And also, can I just say what's really worth it is that Emerald Fennell has a cameo in this film, and it is fabulous.
Yes, it's a certain kind of lip product that she's using that we can't discuss what it's actually called. But yes, she is very good in her little tiny cameo.
Keep your eyes peeled for it, though, because it is tiny, isn't it? It's a tiny cameo. Yeah.
But I had to rewind to catch it.
But it is also absolutely, again, in keeping with the what is makeup for, and the actual discussion of what she's using her makeup for is, again, another way in which women are below men. And it's all just so clever. And without being preachy, we must say, don't be put off. It is brilliant. So that is Promising Young Woman, which is available on Sky Cinema from tomorrow, Friday the 16th. So you can watch it as many times as you like, and do tweet us and tell us your thoughts. Okay, so before we go on to our next movie, it's time for our new regular, which is learning set life lingo. When you go on a film set, everybody talks in a certain way about things that you're like, what are they saying? So this is called plain talking. And this week, we're talking about the term hot set. What's a hot set, Matt?
So a hot set is when everything is set up for filming, so they're literally ready to go. So basically, don't go in there and touch anything. Don't mess around with anything. You'll ruin the continuity of the film if you just get in there and start fiddling about, basically.
Yeah. So often when you go on a film set, they'll take you onto a set and they'll be like, this is a hot set, so nobody move anything. And it's very often the case that you really would like to touch everything there because it's a room that's been set up to perfection. Have you been on hot sets, Ashanti?
I've only been on one many years ago at Dorney Village in Scotland for an Indian film, the Tamil remake of Sense and Sensibility called Kandukundin, Kandukundin. And we had a few moments where we just had to be really careful. Well, I was just there as a friend of the directors, but it was very interesting to see how they manage the set. And for me, when I think about hot sets, I'm always thinking of that Last of the Starks episode of Game of Thrones where the Starbucks car
yes. Yeah. And there was a water bottle in Little Women, wasn't there, that cropped up in a library scene. I know that is the awful thing. You don't want to be that person that leaves a coffee cup on a set, do you? And ruin everything. I went on the set of Thor 2, The Dark World, and went round Jane's apartment, which was completely set up and it had fridge magnets all over. And one naughty person had change the fridge magnets to read a rude message. And when I saw the film, I was looking so hard to see if boobs was written on the fridge in the background, but I couldn't see it, so no idea. And when I went on Spectre, we went to the hotel room that James Bond goes to at the very beginning during the Day of the Dead parade, and everything was perfection. If you opened a drawer, all the stationery had this fake hotel stationery in there. Went into the bathroom, the cabinets were full of hotel soap or monogrammed towels, and you don't even see inside the bathroom. It's amazing the detail in these things. But I really was tempted to steal a sort of box of matches or something out of the ashtray, but you can't touch a single thing. It is amazing when you actually go on a set and see these things, isn't it?
But the main one that springs to mind for me thinking about this question is something a bit smaller scale, but one of my favorite set visits of recent years was I went to Aardman for Shaun the Sheep Farmageddon. We saw quite a lot of stuff. Yeah, we got to hold some of the little puppets and things, but they brought us into a hot set there where they were kind of setting up, and it was the sort of Ministry of Alien Detection where there's all the people going around in hazmat suits and stuff like that. Looked amazing and huge, even though obviously very small. But there you could almost just sense their nerves where they were still kind of working there and setting up shots. They were like,
but can you imagine if you just accidentally knocked one of those over?
I know. There was sort of actual begging of like, please, please
don't go near it.
Don't even breathe too close to these because, they're getting frames per day, of footage. Yes. So.
Yeah.
Yes, but that was very fun.
Cool. Okay, shall we look at another movie then? Shall we get our sketchbooks out this time for this?
Your wife is unwilling to make it a success.
She has to get away from their clutches.
Your husband disapproves of pleasure, but you do not.
In my opinion, there's nothing wrong with your wife. The simple love and attention will not cure.
I do not want to kill me.
She means to poison me.
You belong in the asylum. Stop.
Okay, so this is Effie Gray. Who is Effie Gray and how do we meet her, Ashanti?
Well, so this is actually an older film that came out in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. It's the 13th dramatization. Basically, it's about the wife of an art critic, John Ruskin. He was very famous in his time, and he just did not fancy this woman at all. This is the crux of this story, is that she marries him. She's this wide-eyed young girl, and he's a lot older than her. I'm not sure exactly how much older, but he looked like he was at least 20
years. She was 19, I think, when she married him, and he must be in his late 40s, 50s.
50s so, even. Gosh, yeah. I could see that in the way they cast for this. And the beautiful young Dakota Fanning is in this. Emma Thompson is in this. Julie Walters is in this. And basically, it's a love triangle that's captivated the world. Although I personally found it, if I can be very transparent, I found it quite lackluster. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that this film showcased what this story could have really been like. I felt like they went through the motions. They made a film that was very beautiful. It's a period piece. Emma Thompson was fantastic. She shines as always.
And she wrote the screenplay for this as well.
Aha. Oops. Sorry, Emma. Because the screenplay for me didn't quite work. I love you so much, Emma Thompson, if you're listening in. But I felt that as a period drama, I felt that the dramatic side of things didn't quite elevate as they should have. And Effie Gray as a character, I guess she was this woman who was so upset by her husband not fancying her that she became ill and it affected her in a very psychosomatic way. This was her life, and then meets a guy and, you know, it seems like things can go well for her if she leaves this husband. But back in the day, even having a divorce or an annulment was considered
shocking.
And also she had this little encounter in Venice, which really upset her because this guy, he seemed, well, at the time, really charming. There he was on the gondola with her. And then he tries to rape her. And I think that affected her very much. And that made the rest of her life in a terrible place. Obviously, there wasn't counseling and anything for mental health or PTSD back then. And as it was, she was already having this struggle at home because her husband was completely kind of oblivious to the fact that this woman really wanted to be his wife. So it actually has a very interesting storyline, but I just felt quite sad that they didn't do it full justice.
It's an interesting film to watch alongside Promising Young Woman, isn't it? Very, very different, but also sort of dealing with some of the same issues of what you want a woman to be. I mean, obviously this one is set in Victorian times, but Ruskin is very much a sort of man child who has been given everything by his parents, who you mentioned, played by Julie Walters and David Suchet. And a woman is purely an adornment, and he is not interested in her as a person in any kind of way, is he? In fact, he's almost repulsed by her if she is anything but a dainty little doll that he literally parades around and who just worships him. It goes into this idea of, you know, what does he want from a wife, because he married her knowing her from being a child. So that, you know, it's quite dodgy, isn't it, Matt?
He definitely, as you mentioned earlier, definitely a bit of a man child. And it's quite interesting. So we should also add into the mix that he's played by Greg Wise, aka Mr. Emma Thompson. So it's quite interesting that she sort of thought, oh yeah, he'd be good for this.
Hey, darling, I want to play a real bastard. Would you like to come and play it?
I largely agree with what you've both said. It is definitely a bit flat. And as Ashan said, it's releasing 2014, it had actually been held back a couple of years before that as well, because there seemed to be some sort of issues with the screenplay going through some kind of legal issues, which almost is sort of more interesting than the film in a way. Maybe it sticks too close to real life. I'm not really particularly familiar with the story, but you feel like if it was fictional, you could have made that love triangle a bit more exciting. But it's exceptionally kind of sedate and very, very sort of slow moving. But I sort of liked the performances. I liked seeing Julie Walters playing like an absolute meanie. That was quite a nice change. And Emma Thompson, as always, obviously kind of lights it up when she does appear. She's got sort of very much a supporting role, but she really brightens it up when she appears. And it's all quite on the nose with some of the sort of art criticism and stuff, but I found it watchable for its runtime. If not one I would ever really feel obliged to give a hard recommend to anyone, but I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, the love triangle is with Tom Sturridge playing John Everett Millais. You don't really feel the steam between those two either, do you, Ashanti?
No, not at all. It just felt like the whole thing just came together, something that felt really strange, especially I think with the Me Too movement having happened after this film was made. I wonder what Emma Thompson herself will say now, looking back at it.
And if she'd have written it differently, if she'd written it now.
Lady Eastlake is what I'm saying, because more of Emma Thompson would have probably made that film a lot better.
It is one of those things as well, that when the way she delivers lines and her line readings are so vivacious and feel so authentic and so real. And yet when you hear other people reading her lines, they feel dead. And it's just this very strange thing that you suddenly realise that, was Howard's End so brilliant because she was such a large part of it and delivering those lines so perfectly, and the same with sort of Sense and Sensibility. It just felt like quite a dud script for somebody like Emma Thompson to have written. And, you know, Dakota Fanning doing a perfect English accent, but it feels like she was struggling so hard to maintain that accent, she forgot to put the emotion into it. Bless her. She's pitch perfect. She looks the spitting image of Effie Gray, who was a model for some of the romantic period artists. So you can Google her and she looks absolutely perfect. But the fact is, she was a very spirited woman. And this is a very interesting story. A woman who actually says, do you know what? I don't want to be in a marriage like this. And I think there is another way. It's a shame, really, that the approach to that story has sort of been tempered with a Ruskin brush itself. Do the thing that's required and no more. And I don't want to see any spirit. That's how I felt about it.
100%. Hard agree.
You sort of hit the nail on the head in the sense that, like, yeah, they could have really structured the story differently and kind of, you know, we could have seen her in a slightly different point in her life, whereas so much of the film is her in this unhappy situation where she's just so worn down and she almost basically gives up, really, at one point. She's kind of so ill with all the sort of stress. Yeah, we don't really see her at her kind of best, and yeah, almost it's very much John Ruskin's story as well. Perhaps would have been more interesting if it was more her story and more her arc.
Yeah, because you get so much explanation of his motivation that, as we've said, he's a sort of babied man, that he possibly has strange sexual desires that are not related to adult women. You know, we get so much backstory for him and really very little for her herself, even though the title of the film is Effie Gray. So, I mean, we can recommend this if you want a bit of bonnets, if you fancy a bit of bonnets and bustles and heaving bosoms. Agree?
It's a solid period drama. Like I say, I actually wasn't bored watching it. Like, 3 stars for me, you know, that's what I would go like.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't go in with wild expectations, you know, something that's going to sort of reinvent the wheel.
Okay, so that is Effie Gray, and that is available on VOD from Friday. So next, Kate Winslet is hitting the small screen and HBO with this.
The Easttown Police Department received a call reporting a dead body in Creedham Creek.
We've decided to bring in a county detective to assist with the case.
How do you like working with my mom so far?
We're just getting started out. Any tips?
Lower your expectations.
Should we do this outside?
No. All right, let's go.
Hey, whoa.
Mayor,
what's happening?
She knows what's happening, Tony. Okay. She knows. Yeah. All right, let me go.
Are you friends with these people?
Yeah.
So, Matt, Mayor of Easttown. It's not about a horse. It's no. Kate Winslet. What's she playing?
Kate Winslet is playing Mayor, and you'll be unsurprised to learn she lives in a place called Easttown in Pennsylvania. Wow. She's a detective, and this is a limited series revolving around a murder mystery. And I went into this not knowing anything about it. I literally just had my orders to watch it for this week. I'd actually never heard of it.
Your orders to watch it? Yeah. Like I stand over you and tell you.
I'd never heard of it. And I've watched the first 2 episodes, so I'm only coming at it from 2 episodes worth. I found the first episodes a bit slow, especially the first half. I was kind of a bit like, oh, what is this? It's just a bit of a grim detective drama with... She's clearly, you know, got this very unhappy home life and, you know, she's quite a miserable character, I suppose, to put it bluntly. But then the murder unfurls. I won't say exactly, you know, what happens. So by the end of the first episode, I was like, you know, I'll watch another. And then in the second one, I really, really felt hooked by the second one. So I'm really now keen to go on and watch more because, as I said, it's set in this small town in Pennsylvania. She's a police detective. And a year previously, another young girl has disappeared and that's never been resolved. Obviously, the mother's very distraught about that and kind of, you know, very publicly keeps drawing attention to that fact, you know, so... Mayor has that kind of pressure on her already, that there's this very public case, you know, that's just unsolved. It's obviously very important to this small town, and because it is such a small town, everybody kind of knows everyone, and there's these weird relationships and tensions. And then when this murder kicks off, you know, we see that, you know, those tensions exacerbate much further because everyone knows everyone, you know. So when anyone's being
and everyone's a suspect.
Yeah, exactly. And even Kate Winslet's character has got a teenage daughter played by Ngori Rice. And she was aware of this girl who's now been murdered. She was in the same year at school. So there's this kind of, you know, she has to be interviewed as well as part of the proceedings. So it's all very, very knotty. And she has her own troubles from her past mayor, as we learned, you know, she also carries a lot of trauma. Yeah. So then I really got hooked into it in the second half. And you also get this nice dynamic where Evan Peters from WandaVision turns up, playing a very different character to what I've seen him play before. But he's the kind of detective who's brought in as a pair of fresh eyes. There's this really nice dynamic between him and Mayor because he's the kind of smart, fresh-faced, by-the-book young guy. And she's the kind of jaded, you know, doing things in her own sort of small-town way, knows everything that goes on in the town. So I really like that dynamic between them. I felt that was a bit different to what I'd seen in these kind of things before. And I enjoyed, you know, him especially playing a bit against type, you know. Yeah.
Did you like it, Ashanti? Episodes.
I am totally hooked.
Mm-hmm. Like, me too.
How many episodes have you guys watched? Because I've only got five. The T down.
I've watched
You've
five.
Seen all 5 years? Oh, I've only got to episode three.
Purely because I, like you guys, the first one I was like, eh. But it's that thing, isn't it? It's the luxury of the long time to really settle in so that when things start to happen in episode two, you're invested in this town. You feel like you know it. So I just had to gobble up the rest of the ones that are available to me. And I cannot wait to find out what happens next. How did you find it,
Shanti?
There's
seven in total, aren't there?
So. Yeah, there's seven. So I've got two more. What about you?
I 100% with both of you on the fact that the first episode felt very kind of slow. I just kept saying, gosh, so much exposition. Let's get to the point. Let me see the murder. You know, because I
let me see the murder. That's a Shanti's takeaway, everyone.
It's like, show me. It's just like, you know, in The Mandalorian when the baddie keeps saying, show me the baby. This is me. I like to get to the point, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Quicksilver pops in and suddenly I was even more riveted. I'd initially been kind of, okay, let me just check my phone, you know, that kind of thing. And my husband said, just watch it. Isn't Kate Winslet amazing? And she really is, because once you get to about episode 2 and 3, you start to see those famous acting chops just really showing, because she has had such a tough life. She's had a son who's taken his own life. She is in a terrible place, actually. And she has to live in the same town as her ex-husband who has moved on. So her life isn't easy by any means. And then in comes Quicksilver, as I like to keep calling him. Evan Peters comes in there to be her kind of companion. Then you see Guy Pearce come in. I keep thinking Neighbours, because I was addicted to Neighbours as a teenager in East London. There he comes in and you just think, oh, this is very interesting. What's he doing in this town? And then there's this very ominous pastor. And the minute they go to question him, you're watching his face very closely, because I love this about HBO and their dramas. They always do this close face panning and they somehow seem to beautifully kind of give a bokeh effect to everything in the back. And you see the face of this person and you're watching it change in very minuscule ways. And you're thinking, what is he hiding? Yes. So this was all so, so, so interesting to me. And suddenly I have to carve out another kind of 2 hours today to watch the next two episodes. And then the fact that we have to wait till May to see the last two episodes.
Like you say, Winslet is excellent. She got a lot of sort of, oh, she should get awards for Ammonite. And this is quite a similar role. But I think this is far, far superior. It's so layered. It's so messy. You know, Mare is messy. She schlubs around in t-shirts. She doesn't go by the book. She does things wrong. She does parenting wrong. She eats the wrong thing. She's always drinking a beer. She's semi-alcoholic. And yet she is just so authentic and likable, even when she's doing things that aren't particularly likable themselves, like arresting young girls in the middle of their waitressing service and things like that. She's just a really interesting character. And what Winslet brings to it is, as you say, this acting chops and this layering that is just fascinating to watch. And I love that whole idea that everyone's a suspect. So is it the priest? Is it the new guy who's turned up to do lessons at the college? Is it one of the police? Is it one of the dads? Is it one of the teenage girls? Who's done this? And at the moment, there's no indication of who it might be. And I love that. It's a proper whodunit. But equally, the town is another character, you know, a town that we've sort of seen in like Into the Furnace and other films, this sort of blue collar town of people who speak with a certain accent. Could you unhear the accent once you'd heard it? The way they say, oh, I don't know. Who knows? No one's come. As soon as you hear one person do it, you can't unhear it. I love that. I love a place that has a specific accent. Just the whole thing has completely entranced me. I can't wait to see the rest.
Yeah, and you really feel all those kind of, like I say, all those kind of connections between the town and so everyone knowing each other and everyone having these weird relationships and the fact they can't kind of escape each other. You know, if they go to the local sort of shop, there's someone that they don't really want to run into is there, you know. I really like that. And I thought it was interesting, Jane, as well. I don't know if you mentioned this on purpose, but you mentioned Out of the Furnace. And this is kind of created and written by Brad Inglesby, who wrote that and also wrote American Woman, Sienna Miller, which came out a couple of years ago. And I didn't realise that at first. And then when I looked it up after, I was like, it suddenly kind of clicked, because you really are in that same sort of Pennsylvania sort of, you know, working class town milieu. And it really feels kind of a piece of those. But also, you know, it's its own thing as well.
Yeah, so. It's very different from the last HBO sort of water cooler show, The Undoing, which was very much, you know, New York, wealthy people glossy. Living these glossy, beautiful lives. This is very much a life you can probably recognise. And I love the grandma in it, who's always drinking a sherry. Yeah, it's great. So are we highly recommending this one as well for viewing? You've got 7 hours of your life to devote to this, and they're well worth it, right?
So they are releasing this week after week, are they?
Okay. Yes, they are. Unfortunately, okay. I wanted them to just give us the whole drop, but no, we have to wait.
Okay, that is starting on Sky Atlantic on Monday, the 19th of April. So get watching. Okay, so before we get to this week's final film, it's time to test your film nerd powers with alternative line reading. I do a line from a movie, but with the incorrect emphasis or accent, and you have to name that movie. So are you ready for this?
Ready. Yes.
Okay. This is in the style of Sean Bean. I'm going to do it. Are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Are you going to bite? What film is that from?
That was fantastic. You nailed Sean's accent.
But what's it from?
Was it from TV's Sharp?
No, it wasn't. It's not actually
the accent. Just
no, I've just thrown that in to throw you off the scent. It's, you know, a complicated man shouting at another complicated man in a warehouse.
I think I know this one simply because of a student poster I had on my wall. So I'll let Ashanti.
What do you think, Ashanti?
Well, that can only come from the mind of Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
It can only, and I bet you had that huge poster of Reservoir Dogs, right?
Yes. Matt?
Sure, yeah, that's the one.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Or are you going to bite?
Quentin needs to talk to Sean Bean and get him in his next project, because I feel like that's a partnership that hasn't yet happened and could.
And can he add Statham to it? Jason Statham will make me very happy.
What a weird movie that would be, but yeah. Anyway, next week it's going to be, I'm not going to do it. Someone else will have to do it because I'm going to run out of accents. I can only do that one because it's my Yorkshire accent of birth. Right, final movie of the week then. It's time for a ruck with this.
3, 2, 1, there's this element of being a rugby player, even as a gay rugby player, that there's a certain masculinity that you need to maintain. To me, that's bollocks. You know, I will be tough and brutal and kick your ass on the pitch. When I'm off the pitch, I will be as flagrant and as flamboyant as I want.
Woo! I'd never had depression before, but I was definitely at that, you know, like, I was at the lowest of the low. And just when I was about to walk away from rugby, but something told me, no, rugby can still help you, then the club and this season saved my life, probably saved my life, you know.
Steelers, Ashanti. Who are the Steelers?
They are the first LGBTQ plus rugby club. I had never heard of them and I was completely captivated by this. Initially, I thought, oh, Steelers, what is this all about? And I went in without really doing any reading and started watching this. And it was really, really interesting because we've never seen something like this before. It never existed before. And this club was created with a lesbian coach, all these gay rugby players, and them coming together and struggling because, just like what we were talking about with the patriarchy and smashing glass ceilings, the LGBTQ plus community is constantly battling this. You always think, well, they're a rugby club. They're here to play a sport. Why is there a problem? But actually, once you watch this film, it'll remind you how much an LGBTQ plus person has to struggle on a day-to-day life just to do something that seems so, so, so normal. They want to play a sport. You know, she wants to be a coach, this lady called Nick, and she's just told things like, aren't you worried about being hit in the breasts? You know, these are the sort of things she's got to listen to from people. I was very rapt by this little documentary because I thought, wow, it's quite empowering. And it also has all of us looking at this and realizing that what is a normal life, you know, and being yourself, your authentic self. For me, I just thought, gosh, I've battled that a lot as a person of color, but I've pretty much been an authentic self for most of my life at least up to an extent. But for a lot of these people, they just couldn't be at all. One of the characters who, you know, is a drag queen, but also this big, burly, you know, cool rugby player. And, you know, that dual life that he's had to lead is so, so, so difficult. And for me, I just love the fact that this club was like cathartic to these people who joined. And it allowed them to kind of embrace their true selves, to embrace who they are, and also to kind of take a real deep look at, you know, discrimination in sports, because I don't think it's talked about enough.
How did you like it, Matt?
Yeah, I agree largely with what Shanti said. Like, it's very engaging little film, and it is little. It feels very small scale. This is like, they call this the sort of gay rugby World Cup. But it does feel in a nice way. It feels small. It feels like you just get to know a few of the team members. And it's still moving hearing their stories and their kind of struggles and the kind of bullying that a lot of them face and just things like that, you know. And for me, especially as like a sort of cishet white male douche, you realize how hard obviously some people do have it. And feels kind of small and scrappy, but I thought it was, yeah, just like a really, really sort of engaging little film.
It does make you tear up a bit, because it really, from the outset, has you rooting for these guys in this tournament that they're competing in. You know, it plays like a bit of a sports movie, doesn't it? And so you do have those dramatic highs and lows. I found it really weirdly moving. It could have been just because I was tired and emotional. Yeah, I found myself really going on this little journey with them. And it was something that I had no concept of. I didn't know that there was this team that come out of King's Cross and that were established in the 90s and has gone on to create this entire worldwide sort of infrastructure of teams that play rugby, but that doesn't infringe on the way that they live their lives elsewhere, which I possibly can't say about regular rugby, because obviously, as we've said, it is quite a difficult thing, sexuality in sport. Would we recommend this? It's on Amazon Prime.
I definitely would say
give this a watch. Yeah, like you say, it definitely has the underdog sports movie vibe to it.
Absolutely.
You know,
part of it also is about how the people around you embrace you for who you are. There's a story of a guy called Simon, for example. You know, his coming out story itself, you know, a lot of us just wouldn't even think about that because we didn't have to do it or go through it. And, you know, a lot of us also assume that our parents will be against our decisions. But he had a dad who was very proud that he kind of embraced his true self. He's trying to wean himself out of using antidepressants. This feels like the right film for this time where people are trying to move from this whole pandemic and move into the next kind of phase where things are opening up. There were lots of parallels there that I could feel as well. And I thought, yeah, this is a good time to drop this film onto Amazon.
Well, if you want to see that and understand some of the rules of rugby as well, which I also was unaware of, it is on Amazon Prime and it is available from Friday the 16th. That's it for this week. But before we go, it's time for a reader's question. What film did you watch too young and has it scarred you? Ashanti.
Okay, so here's my story. The 1976 version of The Omen. Uh-huh. I was 8 years old.
Yes, I was eight years old.
We were on holiday in London from Nigeria. This was kind of in the mid-80s. And this film, for some reason, was showing on British television, perhaps for the first time. And of course, my dad didn't really care about BBFC ratings, watershed moments, you know, none of those mattered really. And it was showing on TV and here we were on holiday. And my dad said, yes, it's going to be very scary, but you should be brave and watch it. He said, the scariness is just because of, you know, the music and the sound design.
Which 8-year-olds are well into, aren't they?
Yeah, well into.
8-year-olds love sound design in movies.
And I was like, okay, fair enough. We were staying with this family and everybody wanted to watch this. And I was like the youngest there. The other kids there were all in their teens, late teens. So it was perfectly fine for them. And I was really fearless before this film. And it definitely scarred me because the wild Rottweiler scene, that was freaky. I was phobic of dogs because as a baby, my grandparents' dog scratched me on my face. I was born in Sri Lanka and we'd lived there for part of my life. I was so freaked out by dogs. And of course, my dad didn't know there would be dogs, I guess, in this film. And I'm still phobic of dogs, even though I've kind of over the whole omen thing. But then, you know, that thing with the ominous birthmarks on the head, and there I was then looking in the mirror, you know, have I got this birthmark? Have I got the mark? It was just completely freaking out, because I'd started learning Christianity at school in Nigeria, because we were given the choice of Islam or Christianity. And as a Hindu, my parents taught me bits about my religion, but at school we had to learn what was given to us, really. And the choice was Christianity or Islam, and I went for Christianity because I could do it in English, didn't need to learn any Arabic, you know, a bit lazy me at the time. So this whole idea of the Antichrist, so I'd only been there in primary school, what, for 3 years before I saw this film. So I was completely freaked out. And then my dad was talking about triangular numbers and Revelation 13 verse 18.
Oh my
it's
God.
Also freaky. You know, he's a pure mathematics professor, so he found this whole idea of the triangular number really interesting. And there I was, scarred for life.
Well done, Dad. Good work. What about you, Matt? Has your dad cocked up and given you a film that you shouldn't have seen?
Thing is, I just saw so many that I shouldn't have seen when I was younger, but like I don't think they did me any lasting harm. Like one that sticks to mind is RoboCop. I remember seeing that at an exceptionally young age. I think in a way, like, because there was a RoboCop cartoon, and like RoboCop sort of comes across and sounds and looks a bit like a sort of comic book character or something, that you kind of forget how insanely violent the first film is. And I do remember being slightly disturbed when Murphy's killed in that sort of original scene. Like the rest of it, I just was unbothered by, but that bothered me. But no lasting effects apart from just a love of gory 80s science fiction, you know, that stayed with me.
I saw Jaws a bit too young because, to be honest, I think you can watch that at any age, but I watched it at an age where I just found it so terrifying and thrillingly terrifying. But to this day, I love swimming in the sea because it's like, oh, it's not a swimming pool. Look at us swimming in the sea. But if I go out to a certain depth, and I can look down and I can dangle my feet and I can see my feet dangling in the water with the depths below, I can absolutely see that shark coming for me. And I will, even now to this day, swim to the shore like the clappers because I've spooked myself. I will never get the fear of Jaws out of my head. I think that's scarred me for life. I can even do it in a particularly deep swimming pool, give myself the willies. I still can watch that film and feel the sort of visceral, scary thrill of it that I did when I first watched it as a kid. And my brother and I had it on a VHS, and we wore that tape out. It went really quite, you know, when it sort of and starts to snow on it. We watched it so much, and even having watched it that many times, it's still a corker. So that's mine. So well done, all parents giving nightmares to children.
As a parent. It does make you wonder, like, because I sort of think, oh, it didn't do me any harm, but then it still think, oh, just who knows.
I was traumatised by the woods in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs for years, and that's a children's film. And I still don't enjoy a dark walk in the woods in case there's eyes everywhere. The wonder of film there, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back next week with more. But for now, do look in your newsagents or on the high street, because the current issue is out on the cover. And Ashanti's written some lovely things about wicked women of cinema in there. So have a look for that. But for now, I think we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.